and vitamins for a morning wake-up or an afternoon snack. Chop 1/2 cup of parsley leaves, no stems, 1 medium apple, cored, 1/2 lemon peeled and seeded, and 1-inch piece of ginger peeled, 1 small whole cucumber, 2 stalks of celery. Place in a blender and blend well. Add up to 1 cup of water for smoothness. Strain through a fine mesh sieve to remove solids and pour into a glass over ice. Tummy smoother. This recipe is great for an upset stomach or when you're feeling under the weather and need something mild to digest. Put 3 6-inch long zucchini, chopped, 3 stalks celery, chopped, 1 pound green beans, and 1 to 2 cloves of garlic, optional, in 4 cups water in a saucepan. Bring to boil, then reduce heat and simmer. Covered, 15 minutes. Add 1 to 2 bunches parsley leaves, approximately 2 cups, and puree with an immersion blender. Add salt and pepper to taste. Drink hot. Keep 2 days in the fridge. That article was Natural Benefits of Parsley by Erica Ellen Sansone. The next article is The ER, To Go or Not to Go by Holly Pevsner. The pandemic may have made you second guess a trip to the emergency room, and in some cases that might be a good thing. I'm happy when families don't rush to the ER for conditions that can be treated in a primary care, like ear infections, pink eye, strep throat, and rashes, says Katie Lockwood, MD, an attending physician at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. But because true emergencies still require an ER, here's how to make the best, safest decision for your family. 1. Fever. Families often bring kids to the ER for fevers, but it's usually not necessary, says C. Anthony Lim, MD, Director of Pediatric Emergency Medicine at Mount Sinai Health System in New York City. I tell parents to monitor symptoms and use Motrin or Tylenol if needed. However, you should go to the ER if your baby is less than 2 months old and has a fever of 100.4 degrees Fahrenheit or more. Seek swift help if a child of any age has a severe neck, abdominal, or headache pain with a fever. Call a pediatrician or urgent care if the fever lasts more than 3 days or is accompanied by vomiting or the fever lowers but your child is listless. Be aware, though, that in general, urgent care centers are less equipped for pediatric conditions, says Dr. Lim. Call your pediatrician first. Also, call the doc if you know that your kid recently was exposed to COVID-19 or traveled to a COVID-19 hotspot. 2. Vomiting and diarrhea. Vomiting and diarrhea are most often symptoms of a stomach bug or a mild case of food poisoning that can be dealt with safely in the comfort of your home. However, you should go to the ER if your child shows signs of dehydration, such as lack of tears, dry lips, or decreased urine output. With a baby, keep an eye out for fewer than 3 wet diapers in a day or sunken fontanelle soft spot. If vomiting occurs following a head injury or the child is throwing up blood, go to the ER, says Dr. Lim. Call the pediatrician if your child also has persistent abdominal pain, especially if it drifts from the midsection to the lower right abdomen, a sign of appendicitis. Additionally, reach out if they have bloody stool or a high fever, more than 102 degrees Fahrenheit, if they can't keep down clear liquids or symptoms intensify. Burns or other injuries, 3. These can be sudden or scary. Go to the ER if your child has lost consciousness, experienced persistent vomiting, or intense headache, or an injury. Large burns, obvious broken bones or neck injuries, or animal bites on the face or hands also require an ER visit. That's all the time we have for that article, and that was The ER, To Go or Not to Go by Holly Pevsner. That concludes today's reading from the November 2020 issue of Prevention Magazine. This has been Herbert Gilmore for the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Thank you for listening to GARS.
Our Thanksgiving series continues on the Noon Book Hour as we read Thanksgiving by Janet Ivanovich. In Williamsburg, Virginia, Megan Murphy is a potter and historical greeter who ran away from her hometown to start over. She had been left at the altar by her previous fiancé. She wanted a new beginning. And now, when it comes to men, Megan Murphy has an aversion to "I do." So when she discovered a floppy-eared rabbit gnawing on the hem of her skirt, she meant to give its careless owner a piece of her mind. But Dr. Patrick Hunter was too attractive to stay mad at for long. Add in a cozy colonial cottage and the world's biggest turkey, and the two are soon making Thanksgiving dinner for their families. Thanksgiving by Janet Ivanovich. Weekdays at noon and 2 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 57 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-50s. Then tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the mid-60s. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low in the mid-50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
Coronavirus updates, weekdays at 1.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 6 a.m.
Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil Sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Sunday, November 15th. Action on flaring. Railroad Commission updates flaring exception form. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Amid strong concern about flaring and emissions statewide, the Railroad Commission has taken new steps to address the issue. The Commission took public comments over the summer on a revamped data sheet for statewide Rule 32, which granted exceptions to the ban on flaring natural gas. Earlier this month, the three commissioners approved the revamped data sheet, Form R32, application for exception to statewide Rule 32. The oil and gas industry will now use the new data sheet to apply for an exception to flare gas during oil and gas operations. Andrew Keese, spokesman for the commission, told the Reporter-Telegram by email that the new form gathers more data as distinct elements to facilitate analysis and tabulation, which will also be used for compliance audits when operators submit monthly production reports. It requires location data on each flare vent point and detailed flare vent rate information for multiple property exceptions. Applicants must also provide specific information and documentation to support the exception. In many cases, the changes are expected to reduce the period of time an operator may receive an administrative exception to flare gas, up to 50 to 80% reduction for certain exceptions. Quote, "The reduction in the time period to flare applies to certain administrative exceptions. If an operator needs to continue flaring beyond the reduced time period, then the operator would need to request a hearing. This provision makes the hearing process occur earlier than it otherwise would occur in those situations," Keith said. The new form also provides incentives for operators to use technologies to reduce the amount of gas flared, something Keith said was discussed by Commissioner Wayne Christian's Blue Ribbon Task Force in their flaring report this summer. Quote, "We're pleased the Commission has taken these steps and the first step in what should be a series of actions over time as part of the Commission's and the industry's commitment to reduce flaring," Ben Shepard, president of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, told a Reporter-Telegram in a telephone interview. Shepard, whose association is part of the Blue Ribbon Task Force, as well as the Texas Methane and Flaring Coalition, said the new data sheet is designed to help the commission make better decisions. Quote, "To make better and more informed decisions, it starts with the data," he said. "This will help the commission better understand the reasons for flaring and help guide the response." end quote. The PBPA is also working on the emissions and flaring rules being crafted in New Mexico, where the new rules proposed by the Oil Conservation Division will be considered by the Oil Conservation Commission in January. Quote, New Mexico Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham has said she wants the most stringent rules in the country, he said. Noting the importance of the oil and gas industry to New Mexico and how it, along with the oil and gas industry in Texas and elsewhere, has been devastated by the oil demand destruction caused by the pandemic and resulting oil market crash, he expressed concern about how stringent they may be. Quote, I think we'll get the rules right and allow oil and gas operations to continue while continuing to lower emissions, Shepard said. Form R32 will be part of the Commission's development of a Rule 32 computer program, which will facilitate the online submission of flaring requests and provide the agency with a better mechanism for compliance audits and data analytics. Until the Rule 32 program is online, which is targeted for the spring, operators will be able to use either the current application for exceptions to flaring or the new form R32. Roundtable participants take deep dive into flaring. The story was written by Miller McEwen. Examining the various aspects of flaring, the cause, technologies to add value to the gas before flaring, and improving data surrounding flaring, was on the menu at the second Flaring Emissions Reduction Roundtable presented by the Energy Think Tank at the Petroleum Club last week. Michael Benchbach, oil, gas, and NGL marketing consultant, began the discussion with a presentation on commodity markets and offered potential causes for flaring: pipeline capacity for taking away crude oil, residue gas or natural gas liquids, limited NGL fractionation capacity at Mont Belvieu, the distance from a well to the nearest gas gathering system, gas gathering field compression or plant capacity, limitations in treating gas containing hydrogen sulfide or carbon dioxide, low or negative natural gas prices, and protracted easement negotiations for pipelines or gathering lines. The first step is better information, said Robert Kester, president of Honeywell Rebellion. Kester, keynote speaker at the roundtable, is inventor of Rebellion Photonics, bought by Honeywell, Gas Cloud Imaging Systems and Technologies. Quote, there's a lot of pressure on companies with ESG, Environment Social Governance Initiatives, he said. The supermajors have aggressive targets for their emissions that are quantifiable. Chevron, Exxon, BP have signed on to significantly cut their emissions by 2025. But no one knows how much they're emitting, end quote. He brought along a hyperspectral camera, which uses technology developed by NASA to identify galaxies and identify what those galaxies are composed of. He said the cameras can be deployed to automatically monitor well sites for emissions and quantify those emissions. Quote, it works well for unconventional sites with equipment that's close. The cameras can monitor an area the size of a football field, he said. Already, Permian Basin operators are deploying the cameras, he said. Quote, I can envision a future where sites will be monitored automatically and operators can send out personnel to address problems, Kester said. The cameras can tell an operator how much is being emitted, what is being emitted, and when the emissions begin, which greatly improves response to unplanned emissions. Quote, if someone goes out to look for leaks at a lease and leaves, and the leak starts the next day, the operator may not know for a month, he said. Beyond the oil field, his company has expanded to healthcare amid the pandemic, developing a fever monitoring system that those attending the roundtable had to pass through before entering the event. Enhanced oil recovery, which uses carbon dioxide to push more crude to the surface, can play a role in reducing flaring and emissions, said Steve Melzer of Melzer Consulting and director of the annual CO2 conference. Quote, "One of the best places to put captured CO2 is underground," he said. "We can make oil with that and inject it into saline formations," end quote. With about 60% of the world's EOR projects located in the Permian, Melzer said it offers a massive area to hold large volumes of CO2 that would otherwise be emitted into the atmosphere. Much of the geological learnings related to enhancing oil recovery from those formations can be applied to underground CO2 geological storage, he said. Quote, "Energy companies are looking to reduce their emissions footprint," Melzer said. "Perhaps CO2 EOR could be a solution. Pressure is mounting on operators from stakeholder groups. We're isolated here in West Texas, but there is intense pressure around the world from people who want to see things change connected to ESG and corporate social responsibility," end quote. In addition to using those captured emissions to produce more crude, they can be converted into high-value products, Ray Carr, Director, Commercial Development and Strategy and Global Accounts at Air Products, told the audience. Quote, "Part of the reason we can deal with flaring is 60 years' experience producing hydrogen gas. We can turn gas into high-end products," Carr said. Capturing CO2 has become very important, he said, noting that his company installed a carbon capture plant at its Port Arthur complex and now captures 1 million tons of CO2 annually from two existing hydrogen plants, the equivalent of taking 200,000 cars off the road each year. New data platform offers surface-subsurface peak at water activity. The story was written by Mella McEwen. A new data platform has been launched to ease the flow of information about the water produced from Permian Basin oil fields. SourceWater has unveiled its water map, a water GIS platform that details oil, gas, and disposal well permits, water transfers from every producing well, oil and gas production curves, and water and gas injection curves. It uses satellite data and offers base maps of where water pipelines are located, frack ponds, reserve pits and well pads, geologic fault lines, seismicity, and true disposal formations and injection intervals. Noting that Permian Basin wells produce water alongside oil, oftentimes more water than oil, Joshua Adler, founder and chief executive officer of SourceWater, told the reporter Telegram the question often is where that water goes. "The industry needs to know who is producing water, where that water is being produced, and what producers are doing with that water," he said in a telephone interview. "The information can be useful because, unlike oil and gas pipelines, water midstream companies are not required to report their locations to government agencies." His company's platform can benefit both water midstream companies and operators, he said. Quote, "On the water midstream side, we show where most produced water comes from and goes to, on the surface and in the subsurface, for commercial disposal. That means a water midstream company can see which operators are sending their water long distances to disposal competitors or are injecting water into overpressured or high utilization disposals," Adler said. Water midstream companies could then offer operators access to existing pipelines or build new pipeline or disposal capacity to win that business, Adler said. The platform also pinpoints planned new oil, gas, and disposal wells via its Dirt Work Alert satellite imagery analytics and SWD pre-permit alerts gleaned from legal notices, he added. Unlike their oil and gas counterparts, Adler said water midstream companies aren't required to notify government agencies where they locate their pipelines. That means an operator who has been spending large sums to truck water far off could actually have a water pipeline running alongside his site, Adler said. That is why his company offers what he calls the only commercial maps of water midstream pipelines that not only show location, but true depths and active injection intervals for the 47 disposal formations used in the Permian Basin. Quote, for operators, the value is all of the above, cited for water midstream, and more, Adler said. The great majority of saltwater disposals are owned and operated by oil and gas producers, not by commercial disposal companies. So operators use our surface water infrastructure and subsurface geoscience insights to plan and design their water transfer, disposal, and recycling facilities and minimize water management cost and risk, end quote. The platform also helps operators locate disposal sites with low utilization, avoiding sites that are overpressured and located along fault lines that could lead to seismic events, Adler said. The platform utilizes data published by the Railroad Commission. Asked how valuable that data is, Adler said a big part of the expertise this company has built over 7 years is in building quality assurance and data integrity systems for handling challenging RRC data, automatically identifying and adjusting for common types of errors and emissions and delays. Quote, it is a daily occurrence that a customer questions something they see in the platform, and we click through to the original source documents to see what was reported. You'd be surprised how often the error is something the customer reported to the Railroad Commission themselves in the underlying document. Quote, we've also built out many kinds of data sources that do not rely on Railroad Commission data, such as satellite imagery analytics, web data scraping, and good old-fashioned human intelligence, he said. For example, it is pretty common that we will see a well pad in satellite imagery, but the location on the wellbore record or drilling permit maps to the middle of a road or somewhere off in the bushes, in those kinds of cases, it is obviously the satellite image that is right, not the permit. End quote. Seismicity is a top concern for clients using the platform, Adler said. He said the information lets them trace seismicity events back to the disposal sites through production and injection curves, injection depths and pressures, and their location to fault lines. He said he was surprised to learn there are about 1,500 fault lines throughout the Permian Basin. Quote, we were able to put all these things in one place, he said. We need ways to look at all these factors at the same time. It's risk management, end quote. Energy briefs. SIPES sets November meeting. Members of the Midland chapter of the Society of Independent Professional Earth Scientists will meet November 18th in the upstairs ballroom at the Midland Country Club, beginning with a reception at 11:15 a.m. Speaker will be Noah Dean, Commercial Operations Manager at Oasis Transportation and Marketing. His topic will be detriment of high organic chloride concentrations in crude oil. There is no charge for members, $30 for guests. Reservation should be made by email to george@pemidland.com. Priority Power Management, LLC, a Midland-based independent energy management services and consulting firm, has acquired Texas Power Consultants, LLC. TPC headquartered in Tyler, offers energy advisory and consulting services to electric retail customers in East Texas and beyond. The addition of TPC will strengthen Priority's portfolio buying power for its customers and increase its geographic footprint into the East Texas region with the addition of TPC's longtime and high-quality client base. Further, the acquisition will enhance Priority's ability to leverage its deep experience and resources to guide customers through the energy transition, managing energy costs while utilizing technologies such as demand response, resiliency, solar, and even batteries to achieve a lower carbon footprint and energy spend. Priority is backed by Ara Partners, a private equity firm specializing in industrial decarbonization investments in the industrial and manufacturing, chemicals and materials, energy efficiency, and green fuels and food and agriculture sectors. Whitewater Midstream and MPLX LP announced the substantial completion of a 1.8 billion cubic feet per day expansion of their joint venture Agua Blanca pipeline system. Testing and commissioning of the expansion will begin this month, and the system is anticipated to be brought into full service in early 2021. The Agua Blanca system is connected to almost 20 gas processing sites in the Delaware Basin and is currently transporting gas produced in Culberson, Loving, Reeves, Pecos, Winkler, and Ward counties in Texas, and Eddy and Lee counties in New Mexico to the Waha Hub. The Agua Blanca expansion includes a 42-inch diameter trunk line that more than doubles system capacity to over 3 BCFD while providing significant incremental takeaway capacity for plants servicing Texas and New Mexico gas producers.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, November. After Monday's Spike, Markets Sputter by Dennis Elam, assistant professor at Texas A&M San Antonio and a 1966 graduate of Andrews High School. Quote, President-elect Joe Biden's campaign promise to phase out oil probably signals the end of the long-delayed Keystone XL oil pipeline and threatens the future of Dakota Access, another major crude conduit. Obstructing pipeline projects is one way Mr. Biden could accelerate America's shift toward renewable energy by making oil more difficult and expensive to move around. Other policies that require legislative sign-off would be more challenging to implement unless Democrats won control of the Senate, end quote, based on Wall Street Journal reports. We warned of the return of an EPA run wild in a Biden administration. Already his transition team is targeting pipelines. Next will be a war on natural gas, similar to the one that put West Virginia's coal industry out of business. Last Monday, November 9th, was a big up day in the markets. The DGIA soared 1,600 plus points. Crude oil jumped $3. Both occurred on the idea that a virus vaccine would soon be available. Then the thinking went travel and leisure activities might return to something more normal. Since then, the DJIA gave back about 1,000 points. West Texas Intermediate hit $43 and now has receded to $41.12. Market tops and bottom, as often characterized by a final sharp spike up or down in a burst of optimism or pessimism on the market in question. That may be the case here. The advance decline ratio has dramatically fallen each day since Monday. A lot hinges on the Georgia Senate race. So far, the Senate is even at 48 senators for each party, but both Georgia Senate seats are in runoff races for January 5th. If Democrats John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock win, the Democrats will control the Senate via Harris tiebreaker vote as president of the Senate. Biden is the Trojan horse, which has allowed unelectables like Bernie Sanders, next Labor Secretary, and Kamala Harris, did not even last to the Iowa primary, to achieve national standing. A Green New Deal, higher corporate taxes, open borders, handouts for fiscally irresponsible states, all seem like an unlikely foundation for a continued stock rally. We have noted the high price earnings valuations of the tech stocks, which have driven the rally so far. Watch for the outcome of the Georgia runoff for the next clue about 2021. The Economist. Beyond the Election by Emre Perryman, head of the Perryman Group. The presidential election is almost over, and sorting through the new directions under President-elect Biden has begun. There are still some votes to be counted or recounted, litigation to be dealt with, and protocols to be followed before the election is officially certified, but it's highly unlikely that results will shift. From an economic perspective, it is rare that presidents move the needle much on economic growth. Historically, the economy has fared moderately better in Democratic